Several years ago, I heard about a school board way out west that decided they were going to outlaw Mother's Day that year in their school district. They decided they needed to protect their community from this outmoded and old-fashioned holiday that had lost its meaning, they thought. After all, the holiday was offense to women who couldn't have children or didn't want to have children, or for people whose lifestyle prevented them from being parents at all. The board said further that the holiday was also an offense to those mothers who had been abusing, uncaring, and selfish, and who in some cases had even deserted their children. They added a word or two about some of the mothers who were spending their time trying to make their children feel guilty because they had left the nest and first had forsook them. They finally complained that the holiday was too tender and emotional for those mothers who had lost children to death. School district was not going to allow such an outmoded celebration. Now, I never heard how that came out. I never checked back to see whether they actually pulled that one off or not. Now, obviously, I do not concur with this action, primarily because I was gifted with a grand and wonderful mother, since duplicated in my own home by the mother of our children. But as a pastor, I do face each Mother's Day from the pulpit, knowing that the celebration of the holiday is not as simple as it seems to appear to those who sell cards and flowers and candy and whatever to honor the sainted person who gave life to each of us. Whatever our differences and our difficulties and our perceptions, all of us had or have a mother. Now knowing what has gone before, how I have felt in previous years preaching on this topic about the emotional impact of Mother's Day, I am fully aware as to the ways it works its magic for those both for and against God's children. Still, I come back again with a Mother's Day sermon that, in title at least, excludes many people in the pews. For our sermon, I have narrowed the topic down to the question of communication between couples, how a husband talks to his wife. In my premarital counseling sessions, I always begin asking a couple how their communication skills are going before they get married. 85% of all difficulties in any kind of a relationship can be traced back to a communication problem. One of the best tools we can have as adults is learning how to communicate with other adults. So many times we miss that. We talk right past the other person, whether in a marriage relationship or at work or at play or wherever, the communication skill is needed. So I hope that all of you feel you can listen in and apply these principles to your life and whatever relationships you're involved with. This being Mother's Day, I selected this aspect from a particular, peculiar origin. One day I was on a retreat, and I happened to see some clergy couples talking, and out of the blue, one of the wives asked the other wife, "Has he learned to talk to you yet?" I thought, what a wonderful question, and I was about ready to chip in when I heard the other woman say, "No, he hasn't." And so I stepped back, wondering what was going to come next. And then I heard, "Well, Matthew hasn't either." Then I remember talking to my mother one day, 25 years ago, while my father was still alive. And I asked her, "Mom, how's it going?" And she said, "I'm okay, though I'm a little lonely, because your father doesn't talk to me as much as he used to." Now, I know my dad had his own issues, and I'm not trying to demean him, but what I'm trying to do is to come into this subject from a personal note. Maybe Dad and I and other husbands and fathers that I have known need to learn to talk to their wives and learn the lessons that this Mother's Day sermon is attempting to teach. I hear it in my office all the time when couples come to talk about patching their marriages back together. It's almost like a broken record. He's too busy, she says. He's too busy doing this or that. He works all day, he sleeps all night, and he watches TV in between. Or he plays golf, or he boats, or he drinks. He says, I get along just fine everywhere else in the world. I just don't understand why I can't talk to my wife. Now, I read a survey not long ago. I think it's accurate. It said there are 10,080 minutes in a week. 10,080 minutes. The survey questioned married couples to ask, how many of those minutes do you talk to each other each week, face-to-face talking? The answer was 18 minutes per week. The total time spent talking to each other. Now, Webster defines talk as the expression or exchange of ideas by means of opening the mouth and saying words. Did you get that? Opening the mouth and saying words. So listen, grunts do not count. Bears and pigs grunt. Husbands are supposed to talk. Yelling does not count. Yodelers and hog callers yell, but husbands and friends are supposed to talk. Commercial political commentary, as one wife called it, does not count. News commentators comment on politics. Husbands are supposed to talk. Polite words spoken in public do not count. Maitre d's speak politely in public. Husbands are supposed to talk. Mumbles do not count. Mumbles are fine when you're trying to deceive someone that you really have remembered their name. Husbands are supposed to talk. And if it's true, in any case, that husbands have a difficult time talking to their wives, the more discerning among you might be asking, why? Why can't they talk? I mean, really talk, to share their feelings and their hopes with me. Well, I think one reason why husbands do not talk to their wives is that men, at least in my generation anyway, were not trained to talk. We were trained to work, to excel, to be tough, to be smart, to take charge of situations, to be the protector. I didn't choose to be trained that way. That's just the way it was. In my line of work, I was trained to speak, not trained to talk. We were trained that our job was to make a living, bring the bread and butter home, keep the wolves away from the door, and to try to manipulate things so that it always worked out best for our families. I was trained that way. With successful people, it's even worse. When people are really gigantically successful, then they're the boss down at the office, right? And people listen to them because they're the boss. It's not because they're particularly bright. It's not because they have a particular meaningful thing to say. It's just they're the boss, and people respect them, and they listen to them because they're the boss. When they come home, it's entirely different. They're not the boss at home. And so they need different skills when they get home. Hopefully, there they are equal partners in a relationship called a marriage and in a larger family. Those skills that he uses other places just don't work when he gets home. The late Frank Harrington told a story about how one day his wife reminded him that it was trash day. This is the day you take out the trash. And Frank, who was feeling particularly well that day, said, "Honey, don't you know who I am? I'm the pastor of the largest Presbyterian church in the country." And she said, "You can get away with that down at the church, but here you're my trash man." Second, I think husbands do not talk to their wives because they're afraid of them. They, the husbands, are afraid of them, the wives. I think I know the reason for that. Nietzsche once complained, "God knows us with eyes that see everything, and no one wants to be known that much." Wives see their husbands in all of our foibles of life. I see this sometimes early in marriage where husbands do try to share what's going on in their lives with their wife, and sometimes that comes across as sharing something that makes them look a little weak. And we are trained that if we look weak, then people will take advantage of us, and people might even reject us. They see us acting like a child. They see us acting foolishly, maybe with our own petty ways, the ways that we are dominated by our own selfishness. And so she listens to our exaggerated patter. No one else, at least almost no one else, has seen this side of most of us. And so he's afraid. Afraid to share some more so that she might learn some other things and become really knowledgeable about who he really is. And that's something that he's not quite sure he really wants her to know. He never knows for sure what's going on inside of her. Most of us think we know what our wives are thinking. Most of the time we don't. If others have to listen to him or choose to, she doesn't have to. Now, wives need to be careful. For example, I knew a minister once who, on a particular Sunday, preached a wonderful sermon. He thought it was just grand. 5 years later, his wife told me, on that particular day, he asked me on Sunday afternoon, "Honey, what did you think of the sermon?" And so she said, "I told him." Most of it was kind. It wasn't all positive. And she said, "You know, he has never asked me again that question. Not once." Having acknowledged that we need to share more as husbands and touched upon that secret thing of fear, the last thing I want to say is that we need to talk to our wives because God commands it. Speak kindly to her always. She has a difficult job to do. Whether it's tied up with little children or housework or with her career down at the office or helping you with your retirement or helping you in older age, whatever it is, it's not easy to be a wife or a mother, and it's not getting any easier for the younger generation. There is now so much more going on within a home that I think it's particularly difficult for a woman to thrive and blossom and flourish, to grow and to relax. So my goodness, men, we're dumb. The happiness of women should be the chief end of everything we do. St. Paul said, "Love is patient and kind." Jeremiah told his friends, "Be kind to the brides of your youth. Talk to her. Help her make it through the days and night." And why? She'll be lonely if you don't. If you don't talk to her, someone else might. I don't mean necessarily a great affair. I just mean that we all need to talk to someone. He came to me one day and told me that his marriage was over. I had married them 12 years previously. I had baptized both of their little girls. I'd watched them flourish and blossom within the church and within their both of their careers. She was an executive with a telephone company. He was a builder, building houses everywhere. And he said, "You know what it's come down to? We're like that TV commercial where two cars arrive at the house at exactly the same time. We jump out of our cars, we slam the door, we head for the front door and make it straight to the bar, nary saying a word to each other. "She's found someone else," he said. "Someone else who listens to and talks to her, and she doesn't need me anymore." Well, fortunately for them, it hadn't gone too far yet. And they still loved each other, and the love for each of them and for their children was enough to put it back together. And 4 months later, we were able to do a recommittal of their marriage vows. He wrote me a note sometime later. He said, "I learned a great life lesson. I learned I needed to really talk to her. I almost lost my very best friend." Now let's go back to Ephesians 5, where Paul writes some words in that chapter that some of us have trouble with. He writes in part, "For the husband is head of the wife, just as Christ is head of the church." Now I know that's a particularly difficult paragraph for some. But just two paragraphs later, Paul writes, "Husbands, love your wives as you love your own body." It's curious that Paul would put it that way. I think what Paul is trying to say is, love your wife as you love your own body, the muscle of your body that makes you feel powerful, or the way you run your company, or the way you hit that golf shot when you keep your elbow in, or your particular pet project, or the way you hit that ground stroke in tennis, or the way you boat, or the way you fish, or the way you hunt, or the way you run, or the way that you are involved in community experience, all of that, the way you love yourself, and the image that you have of who you are, at that level of intensity, you should love your wife. The Bible says that you should love her as you love yourself, just as strongly and just as surely. Husbands, love your wives as Christ first loved the church and gave his all and everything that she might live. For now and evermore, amen.